standing above the illusions of the world. You are ready to be a spiritual worker in the Father's kingdom. You have substance, the bread of life, the very light itself flowing as your own identity everywhere. It takes a great deal of courage to stand in the face of something that you fear and to stand on it knowing I am the light, and this that I fear has no power over the light. But when you've done it, you know the truth of it. It takes great courage to stand on the light of someone else's being and know, no, this cannot take place over there where that person is, for there is the light. And every appearance is met that way. Perfect faith casteth out all fear. Not faith that God is going to do something, but the faith that God has already done it. God's perfection is already the fact in all things. That's your perfect faith. And the reason the world suffers is because it has not been taught perfect faith in God's presence everywhere. And so you've got to stand for the world, for your friends, for your loved ones. You've got to present that perfect faith to the Father for them. When you pray, pray not for that person. Pray by recognizing the universal nature of perfection, in which that condition which is presenting itself has no reality. And you are free more than meets the eye. Just to review it quickly, let's take the head cold. It's not that you don't have the head cold, it's that there is none anywhere. Don't meet it on its little finite level. There isn't any anywhere. There's carnal mind presenting the illusion of head colds in 5 million different places, but that's all they are. There are 500 million places saying that God isn't there, and you know better. That's what your function is, to know better. And then even though the appearance may have localized itself where you are, you're knowing it on a universal level will remove it on your local level and other local levels. Don't know it just locally. That's the point of this recognizing carnal mind as the tempter, the assassin, the evildoer, the devil. Don't bring it down to local levels. As Joel's work increased in tempo and as he was coming into the home stretch of his mission on earth, more and more he brought to our attention not to meet the problem at the level of a local situation, but to recognize it as a universal carnal mind temptation. And even though humanly we may not quite understand why, when you do meet it that way, you do understand why. Because you banish the whole power of carnal mind by meeting it that way. And the power falls away, the presumed power. You find you're in the clarity of truth. I don't think in one lesson we're going to resolve that technique, but I'd like to get it across today, because by the 14th of January we're going to have completed our lessons in world work. And I'd like to spend that month between the 14th of January and the 11th of February, when we're not together, I'd like to spend it doing world work with each other, so that we're prepared to meet these things. I think we could probably pause now and resume in a short time. I'm sure there's much more in the chapter here now that will reinforce our study on this aspect of the work. Let's be back in about 5 minutes. Some of these things that we're discussing should be very normal and basic with us. Pardon? Some of these things should be very basic. I mean, we ought to have them behind us. In a sense, I almost feel that it shouldn't have been necessary to even discuss them today, but the questions that have been put to me through the week indicate that there are weaknesses still at this level. And maybe that's why we're still in the 11th chapter of this book, which strangely enough is totally dedicated to the false appearances of the world. Now, this statement from Joel: in this world where an ignorance of truth predominates, we're constantly being faced with sin, disease, death, lack, and limitation, with evil of every kind. If we have been spiritually taught, we will instantly recognize that these suggestions are appearances like the mirage on the desert. Do not accept appearances of good and evil at face value. Accept them only as mirage. Illusion, a form of malpractice or hypnotism, and above all things, do not accept them as something that has to be healed. Now, the reason for that statement is, once you've accepted the mirage of evil, you don't go around healing a mirage. So if you want to heal it, to you it's real, a reality, not a mirage. And you miss the first step, which is the mirage is caused by our material sense, coordinated with the world mind. And so there's that pause now, that inner Sabbath, that resting in the Word, that the material sense produces the mirage of matter, and the evil condition in the mirage of matter must be as much mirage as the matter itself. And so your conclusion finally is, there is no matter in God's universe. And there are no material conditions in God's universe. And as the child of God, you're committed to living in God's universe, not in the world of the carnal mind. And so this is a new lifestyle, isn't it? There is no matter, and there are no material conditions. And even though you're going to go around in a world of matter and material conditions, in your lifestyle as the child of the Father, the light of the world, this must be your constant knowledge. Jesus didn't say, I won't make the cripple walk because there is no cripple, and then turn away and forget about it. He accepted it on the terms that came to him from the world, as we learn to do. but we reinterpret it on our own divine terms. We do not walk away from it and pretend it isn't there, but rather we reveal that something better is there by the knowledge that where the mirage appears, I do not have to remove that mirage, but rather that which is where the mirage is the light of being. The recognition of the one invisible light, always centering in the light where you are, so that you're connected, and that consciousness becomes the health of every detail of your life. That's the miracle of spiritual recognition. That's the new dimension of life that we learn to live while we walk in the world. We're not pretending that things aren't there. We're recognizing that something else is there. We're not telling the world that man isn't sick. We're knowing that all that is there where that man appears to be sick is the light of God, and our knowing is within ourselves, not on the tip of our tongue. It's a permanent knowing. And so don't try to improve the mirage. Just rest in being spirit, being light. And you'll find that when you are resting in being light, the light reveals itself. Our weakness is that once we have established that we're the light, we want to still do something, which is a denial of that which we have just established. We are the light, which is perfect. We are the light there, which is perfect, as well as here. There's nothing to be done but rest in the Word. It's amazing how many things that you thought were real are then uncovered as mirage as you do this. You find the enchantment of walking in the spiritual universe is yours. Nothing has to be healed, reformed, changed, or corrected. We really do not have to get rid of any of the sins, diseases, lacks, or limitations of the persons who come to us. We merely have to refuse to accept the appearances and realize that whatever is presented to us is a state of hypnotism producing an illusion, a mirage. There are two kinds of persons who study this work. One kind says, "What is there in this that is good for me?" And you'll find that person cannot really put this message into practice, because the very nature of that type of consciousness repels truth. The other individual says, "What is the truth? Wherever that is, that's where I go." Now that individual can put this into practice, because they haven't narrowed it down to what of this that I have heard is good for me. They are not conflicting their personal sense with truth and interpreting that which is truth only in the nature or degree to which it helps their personal sense. If you still have yourself lingering in this "what is good for me" attitude, you will miss a great percentage of what is coming across. It must be an unconditioned quest for truth alone. And then you'll find the personal me is out of the way. There was no personal me where Christ expressed as the visible Jesus. There was an unconditioned self. There was a one which was one with all. If it was what's good for me, the message never would have reached this level that we have it at now. I mention this because those who are still in the what's good in it for me may not realize that they're blocking the light of their own being. This is above personal improvement. You don't try to improve the mirage you call your human body or your human self. That's an obstacle. You accept your perfect self where the human body appears. And that perfect self is never going to be tarnished, never going to in any way be less than its perfect self. This is different than a better human you. Your perfect self is there. And unless you're living in your perfect self, you're living in a second or false self, which cannot benefit by divine law. Every problem you have is in that imperfect self you have accepted to be you, which isn't there. Your perfect self does not contain problems. Your perfect self is walking in reality. Your perfect self is permanent. And the mirage of physical form, human life, cannot be accepted if you wish to accept the fatherhood of God. These are issues that must be met, or else you spend the rest of your years improving or trying to improve that which is invisibly perfect. If you work with the present perfection of your being, you won't need as many words to convince you. It has a way of identifying itself. In God's kingdom, there is not a sin, disease, death, lack, or limitation. Now, if there is no sin, disease, death, lack, or limitation in God's kingdom, that's another way of saying that there is no sin, death, disease, lack, or limitation anywhere. The allness of God's kingdom means that there is no sin. There is no lack. There is no limitation. There is no disease. There is no death. When the Master says, raise them from the dead, it means from the belief that there is death. You raise someone from sin, you raise them from the belief that there is sin. Always, all that is evil is the belief, never the fact. The belief is all that is there, and it is made visible as what we have accepted as the fact. Where the fact appears to be, we are looking at our own belief made visible. And the eradication of the belief eradicates the mirage which we thought was the fact. Then you can say, ah, carnal mind, I recognize your method. You place a belief in me, which I subconsciously accept, then it becomes a conscious belief, then it becomes a fact, and now I think I've got it. But this that appears to me as a fact, which I'd like to get rid of, isn't a fact at all. I can't get rid of it. It is a belief made into a visible mirage. Get behind the mirage to the belief and face the belief with truth. The belief is you have this thing. The fact is God didn't create this thing. What is sustaining it? God isn't. Your belief is sustaining it. And carnal mind is making you believe that. Carnal mind is making you accept that. You're a victim of carnal mind. The truth will make you free. What God did not create is not here. That's the truth. This thing that disturbs me is not here. I don't have to get rid of it. I must get rid of my belief that it is here. And I do that by knowing the truth, that God did not place it here, and therefore it is not here. It can be a world war holocaust. It can be an earthquake. It can be a germ. It can be anything that God didn't make, and it cannot be here. It's just a world belief hanging in space waiting for me to say yes, 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 and I refuse to. You don't remove it. You recognize its non-reality. Now, we should be clear then of a lot of things. Able to shuffle off most of the things that superimpose themselves in our consciousness one way or another. We should be almost free enough that we're ready to say, "Thou seest me, thou seest the Father." Even if there's a momentary flaw brought into visible experience, it has nothing to do with you. It's just world thought traveling by. Why detain it? Let it go. Let it go right on its merry way. Don't stop it and claim it for your own. Let it go. It has nothing to do with you. And then we have an open consciousness. We're not a repository for the world's false beliefs. The instant you're faced with a false belief in your consciousness, recognize it. It's just world thought traveling through. Let it go. You'll find it continues right past you, and the false belief that this was going to be bad, or that was going to be bad, or this was not going to be improved, all of that goes right with the world thought. Perfection has ever been there, and when a cloud of world thought passes by, it shines through again. We come unconditioned. We don't have to sit and anticipate problems or worry about what might be, or come to face every day with that funny feeling that I wonder what today is going to bring to me that I have to combat. We start the day in a fresh consciousness of the perfect presence of God everywhere. You don't carry anything from yesterday into today to worry about. Wouldn't it be marvelous to begin every day that free and clear, that all of the yesterdays, with all of the problems they presented, are behind you? And yet that's the truth, isn't it? Spirit is never carrying over memories of this material world into this minute of today. Who's doing it? Our unawareness of the world mind that functions in us as us. When we are wise to it, we can begin a day completely free of all worry, free of all concern, knowing that I am the living light of the Father now and forever. I've opened a new book. When you start your day with that awareness, you don't have the seeds of yesterday's problems to grow into great big oaks today. And you don't have as much to combat or to get rid of. It's a fresh, new, beautiful spiritual day. And if it isn't, you're still in duality. Still accepting the mirage as something you've got to live with. Speaking of the fact that many of the healing works do not come off as we like them to, Joel offers two reasons. The first is a very simple reason. The practitioner hasn't got what it takes. He says, let's face it, our practitioners aren't living in the truth all the time. And because of it, they don't have the truth to be witnesses all the time. But there's a second reason, he said, and this is the second reason. The other reason is that the patients will not yield. They usually have in mind the changing of an evil condition into a good one. And this acts as a barrier. Spiritual healing is not changing an evil condition into a good one. Healing is really the changing of consciousness. And very often there's a reluctance or unwillingness to yield up whatever it is that is acting as a block. Now, I have met that. I have known that there were certain blocks in certain individuals. But it's a delicate subject. You just can't say to a person, this is your block. First of all, because you never really can be sure what the block is. You can only think you know. And secondly, as Joel points out here, people resent being told that they have this point of view. They may hate someone very desperately and don't know it. They may fear a condition very desperately and don't know it. They may be hanging on to an untruth. I know one person who had a sense of guilt about something, and really there weren't any words you could give to that person that would make them lose that sense of guilt. And as long as that sense of guilt remained, the work that had to be done couldn't get through, because the point here is to change the individual's consciousness. And if the sense of guilt is there, that's the consciousness. Now, what are they guilty about? It was a personal sense there. Guilt is of a personal nature. Guilt was the feeling that they hadn't done something they should have done. Well, a change of consciousness would mean that there's no me here to do or not to do. Thou seest me, thou seest the Father. Here is the light of God. This person, having the guilt complex, refused to accept their identity as the light. I may be the light, but look what I did. Well, the light has nothing to do that could be wrong. And so by insisting on a guilt complex, taking the blame for something, this individual was rejecting the light of God as their own individual selfhood. And that was a block. Or there are many other blocks. We hold many people in a state of malpractice because we see them as they appear to be. And we insist that's the way they are. And then we may want them to be healed of something, but we're still holding them in that light, that false sense of humanhood. We've got mortal beings on our hand, physical bodies on our hand. And then when it comes to us, we haven't really come to that total acceptance of ourselves as the light. When we do, then we're not a barrier. There are some people who can call you for help, and all you've got to do is hear their voice, and before that happens, you're all aflame with light. It's as if there's just nothing between you. It's one light. There are some people who invariably call you up and say, every time I call you, it's always almost instantaneous. And you're thinking to yourself, it's not me, I can tell you that. It's you. There's something that some individual has as a block and something that others have is not a block. And, as Joel points out, that's only the second reason. The first one was the practitioner in the first place. Sometimes the human element enters. Certain people will affect you and shouldn't. You shouldn't be affected by that. Or you'll get desperate and you say, oh, I can't have that happen to poor Mrs. So-and-so. And right then you've hurt her. So on. Now continuing his thought, in infinite way work, we are not turning to God to heal anybody. We do not have the kind of God who would let anyone be sick if it were within his knowledge. And since all in reality is in the knowledge of God, God isn't letting anyone get sick. Now who's sick? The personal sense of self. And the personal sense of self, when we are lifted high enough, being out of the way, there's no one there to be sick. Finally, there's no one there to be sick forever, because there's no personal sense of self. So you see why healing is just a part of the work, an incidental part. It's a part of the way on the path to being lifted above the personal sense of self. The ultimate is that Christ takes over where you are and lives your life. And when Christ takes over and lives your life, you have fulfilled your mission. You fulfill the divine blueprint at this level, yielding to Christ. When Christ lives your life, you have your own personal physician. If we recognize God to be omniscience and omnipotence, then surely we cannot find anyone outside of God's knowledge. So who can we heal? It would be just as much of a mirage to think you're healing someone as for them to think they're being healed. Because then practitioner and patient would be both in a false sense of self. But suppose patient and practitioner are both in the knowledge that I am the light. Then whatever temporarily seems to need healing yields very quickly to a more in the light. Now in your world work, people will be reaching for the light of their own being, and you will bring to it the knowledge that you are the light of their being. And that will be two or more. For the soul of everyone is yearning for the light, driving us to that conscious union. Now our healing work takes a new turn. No sin, no disease are supported by a law of God. You see, just hanging out there without God's support, what is it? Is it there if God isn't supporting it? It may seem a vast thing in the cosmic fourth world, because we're just a little entity as a human being looking at this fourth world. And so to us, it's big, it's hovering, it's there. But it's not there. If we could remove personal sense of me and I be the light, this vast thing would just vanish. It only hangs there because there's personal sense looking at it. That's what makes it hang there. That's what makes cancer stay on the earth. That's what makes earthquakes stay on the earth. That's what makes all disease stay on the earth. We're looking at them out of our personal sense, perpetuating that which isn't there. As you withdraw from personal sense, you withdraw from the diseases of the world. You don't heal them. You recognize they aren't there. They do not exist in the light of God, which is all that is present. Sin, disease, never supported by law of God, because if they were, they would be eternal. We never hope to change anything supported by God. The fact that we do break through our sins, diseases, lacks, is sufficient proof that there never was a law of God supporting them. There was only a law of matter, a law of mind. But these are not laws of God. And for this reason, any form of evil can be dispelled. Therefore, we need never be afraid to try to heal, regardless of the name or nature of a claim, because, to begin with, we have the awareness that there is no law of God supporting it, no law of God maintaining it, because it is an erroneous condition. And we know that no law of God created it. This is all part of the purifying of our consciousness. We're finally exonerating God from creating evils, and from supporting evils, and from countenancing evils. Now, in my own work, it's easy to get caught up in all these words. Even while you're learning, it's difficult to assimilate it into a practical way of life. And I find the best way to assimilate it is that no matter what you face, whatever its nature, don't waste your time trying to figure it out. The fact is that only God is present. Whatever comes at you and labels itself this or that or the other thing, go to your knowledge that God is present. That's accepting omnipresence. The minute you've accepted that God is present, you get a whole new perspective about it. Because if God is present, what are you going to do about it that God hasn't already done? The minute you know God is present, there's a new stability. God is present. Now, where is the earthquake going to be in God's presence? You see how the belief in the earthquake is atheism? The belief in the reality of a head cold is atheism? The belief in the reality of any form of evil is atheism? God is present, and the earth is the Lord's, and the fullness of the earth. Is that earth going to quake? What's going to quake? The world mind's going to quake. That's all. That's where the earthquake's going to take place, in the world mind. That's where the head cold takes place, in the world mind. That's where every evil takes place, in the world mind. And all you've got to do is stay in the world mind if you want to share in those evils. That's where the mirage takes place, in the world mind. And when you have accepted God's presence where you are, where the world is, strangely, those evils do not come nigh thy dwelling. It's all in accepting God's presence everywhere and where you are. And as you stand in that, you know God has the power to maintain a perfect universe, so where can the evil be? That world mind is knocking on your Christ mind. It can't enter. Whatever God has, you have. Wherever God is, you are. In that consciousness, you are not open to that which defiles. And so instead of reaching for the little jar in the medicine cabinet, suppose you reach for that little conscious awareness that God is where you are, and see if that doesn't do the job. There was no earthquake in the Christ, and if you're in the Christ consciousness, there's no earthquake in you. It goes right around and makes a detour, leaving even one little rose to bloom if necessary. we are not dividing his garment, as the soldiers did when the Master was on the cross. One seamless garment, the invisible light everywhere, and there's no place in it for a division. God is never divided. God never divides himself. There's no place in it for material activity. There's no place in it for evil activity. That consciousness is the realization of oneness. So anyone, says Joel, can practice healing at any time, if he will realize the basic principle that he's not trying to heal a disease or a condition or a sin or a false appetite. The moment anyone tries to do that, he's trapped, and there will be no healing. We are not dealing with conditions. We are dealing with universal belief in a selfhood apart from God, a universal ignorance, a universal hypnotism, but only an appearance. There is no self apart from God, and therefore there can be no evil anywhere. Now you have the capacity within yourself to heal alcoholics and drug addicts. And I'll tell you exactly how. Shock you because it's so simple. When you can reach the realization that there is no liquor, you'll find you have the way to heal any alcoholic who comes to you. Liquor does not exist. When you find that you know that drugs do not exist, you'll find you have the answer to healing a drug addict. There is no drug. Did God create them? If you believe they exist, you're going to try to heal the drug addict or heal the alcoholic. You can't heal them. You have to know the unreality of the person, the unreality of the condition, the very unreality of that which seemingly is causing them to be alcoholics and drug addicts. God didn't make liquor. God made nothing material. There is no liquor. That's how you'll heal an alcoholic, when you have the realization of it, that there is no liquor, period. Stop right there. You want to heal smoking? There are no cigarettes. They don't exist. Oh, you reach for an illusion and you puff an illusion and you think you're smoking. But when you know there are no cigarettes, you'll find you will not smoke if you don't want to. That's how you break it. There is no material world. There is no cigarette. See, we can't go on thinking there's a material cigarette. There's a material bottle of booze. There isn't any. You want to enjoy it, go ahead. But it isn't there. And if you want to break the habit, it isn't there, is the answer. This will come to you someday as a quick realization, a conviction, an awareness of the non-reality of matter. And you'll see why Joel says anyone can heal. What you've got to do is know the truth. But you've got to know it all the time. Stay with it. Finally, in the infinite way, we never give a treatment to a person. We give the treatment to ourselves. We are the one under treatment because we are the one to whom the appearance has been brought. And it must be met in our own consciousness, going immediately to the eye of our being. When I said we go to God, this is another way of saying we go to I. God, where you are, is the light, going to the eye of your being, meaning accepting that I, the self of me, is the Spirit of God. That's going to the eye of your being. That's the beginning of treating you instead of the patient. And it must be met in our own consciousness, going immediately to the eye of our being, abiding there until we come to the conclusion that I, here, the light of God, and my Father, the infinite, are one. I here and the infinite are one. This then is a universal truth. We wrestle with this truth within ourselves until we now come to the point of conviction that all there is spirit. Now, we haven't told that person stop smoking, stop drinking, stop taking drugs. But that person has come to you for you to help them stop, and you recognize this truth here in yourself. All that's here is spirit, and there is spirit. Finally comes, you know that is true. In a few moments comes a deep sense of peace, a click, a deep breath, something or other, and I know that God is unseen. That's all there is to it, says Joel. As you can see, I've had nothing to do with a patient. That's all there is to it. Over 16 years, he was able to establish that that's all there is to it. But he established it. And as we put in our time, we'll discover that we can say that's all there is to it. As long as there's a me here trying to heal a you there, we're getting nowhere. And so self-crucifixion, which is what the practitioner learns, is also the secret of your living free of the horrors of the world. When you remove the personal sense and have only the light of God where you are, which is one with the light of God everywhere, you won't have to remove those evils. You will watch the invisible light bear witness to itself in the visible world. I think that's pretty clear. You made one more statement that seemed important to me. I think I'd rather look at it in the book. It's the last statement in that chapter. It is possible to bring the very presence of God to earth if you will meditate, make contact with your center, and let that presence be released into the world. The words to me that are important there is, it is possible. Meaning, I, Joel, have done it. Others before me have done it. Others with me have done it. Others will do it. It is possible to bring the very presence of God into your experience. And that should be our single-centered goal, to bring the very presence of God into our experience as a permanent dispensation. Don't wait to suffer. This is an always job, a constant job. You should always be the living presence of God where you are. The light of God must be your constant companion as yourself. And it is the light of everyone else that makes you one with the universe. You're moving in the grace of his presence. Next week we're going to look into the resurrection of Jesus Christ, the 20th chapter of John. We've come to the place where lifting up the eye, seeing the nothingness of self as person, is the accomplished fact of his demonstration on the earth. And now we want to understand and correlate that with our own spiritual progression. We want to find what the religions of the world have missed, that the light of the world, which came forth as the permanent life of Jesus Christ, was demonstrating that the permanent life of us is right where we stand. We are overlooking our permanent life as long as we stand in the sense of a second or material self. When that is cast aside, like Lazarus, we walk in the invisible body of the soul. Resurrection should take us into the conscious awareness of the invisible body of the soul. That's a Christmas present we owe ourselves. That will be our work next Sunday. Chapter 20 of the Gospel of John. And then we'll increase our capacity to do world work in the remaining three sessions. Thanks for bringing the sunshine where the world thought there was rain. Thank you.